This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
In your town, your suburb.
This is the Conversation Hour.
Do we behave differently at airports and on aeroplanes? And by differently, I mean, do we behave badly? Poor manners, no tolerance, abusive, aggressive, just generally behave in a way that is different to how we normally conduct ourselves. So why? Why is it when we enter this environment, our normal behaviours disappear? Is it the stress? Is it the nerves? Is it the lack of oxygen? The alternate world that we enter sort of turns us into different people. Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning. Ben Groundwater, travel writer for the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Ben, I don't know about you. I mean, you travel a lot, right? So you're seasoned. You probably take it in your stride. I, however, I'm always a little bit stressed. I'm a little bit short-tempered with my family. Do we all show the worst of ourselves when we fly?
Yeah, I think we do. And it's kind of an interesting contradiction in some ways, because the experience that we're going through is actually one that is quite, you know, magical and amazing and exciting to be able to travel through the air, to go on a holiday quite often, or to go and see family, or go somewhere amazing. These are all things to get excited about and to really enjoy. But the flip side of the actual physicality, the practicality of the experience, is that it is quite stressful, and that you feel powerless in a lot of situations that you're going to go through just to be able to get on a plane and go to another place. And so, yeah, it does make us get a little bit short-tempered, get a little bit stressed. I really try to be conscious of that and try to push those feelings aside and try and focus on the good parts of the experience. But it is something that, even like as a very experienced traveller, it's something that I have to be aware of and that I do go through as well.
I don't know whether it's the rise of social media and the fact that we can film everything, but it does feel like of late, you know, we've seen some pretty awful incidences of how people have behaved on planes, at airports, the way they either treat other passengers, the way they treat staff. When we look at how many of us now have access to travel, is it only human nature that we are going to have some form of conflict, or do you feel like we all kind of subconsciously feel like we kind of have this right to act however we want, especially when we're on a plane? If there's been delays and cancellations, we feel like we can act out and we can react and we can leave all of our normal sort of behaviours, you know, how we would behave and react in inverted commas normal life. We leave all of that to one side. But once we get on a plane, once we get on an airport, we can talk to people and push people around differently.
I'm not sure if we necessarily think we have a right to act in any way that we can, but I think we certainly think we have a right to a pleasant experience, to a good experience. And as soon as that kind of goes off the rails and is not the case, then people get quite upset about that. And you know, that does happen more and more these days, as you're saying. You know, there are more of us travelling. There are, you know, people are travelling on budget airlines. There have been well-publicised issues with flight cancellations, lost baggage, all these sort of things, delayed flights as well, all these sort of things that are going towards making the experience that we're having not being a good one. And so that when that expectation isn't met, yeah, I think people do get upset about that. And maybe they don't think about the way that they're acting and that that's actually really inappropriate, and that the people you're talking to are not necessarily the ones who've caused all the issues for you in the first place. But, you know, here you are squeezed into quite a small metal tube with a whole lot of complete strangers and it's not going well for you. That makes you upset.
There's a text from Sonia. It says, I work at Avalon Airport. It's much less stressful for passengers as they're mostly lovely. Conversely, if you ask anyone working at Tala if they've been abused that day, they will probably say yes. Our number's 1300 222 774. You can text as well, 0437 774 774. Ben Groundwater is with you today, travel writer from the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. We're on the cusp of a long weekend. It'll be incredibly busy at airports all around Australia today. We'll go into, you know, the best way to act and to react. But before we do, Ben, what role do airports play? And do we do our airports well? I've only ever once had the privilege on somebody else's ticket, pretty much, to go into one of the fancy lounges, to go into the, you know, the Qantas lounge. And I was like a kid at Disneyland. You know, there was potato salad and showers, and it was all very exciting.
Isn't that a nice way to put the good experience? Potato salad and showers.
You had me a potato salad, right? So other countries do airports differently to us. And if there is a, if especially you're on a long haul flight or even a relatively short haul flight, if it's early in the morning and there's cancellations, you know, the images of people sleeping on grounds or on top of their bags, what role does the physicality of the airport play in us having a good experience?
I think it plays a huge part. It sets you up when you get on the plane to be feeling a certain way. And maybe you're feeling excited and happy and comfortable, or maybe you're feeling hassled and stressed. Maybe you've stood in a whole lot of long lines. Maybe you've lined up for a long time to check in your bag. Maybe you've then lined up a long time to get through security. Maybe you've then been forced to stand up in line to board the plane. You know, all these things kind of play into your experience. What is at the airport for you to do? You know, is it exciting? Is it interesting? Is it just a hassle? Does it feel like a rip-off? You know, all these things play a part. Australian airports, I think, probably sit somewhere in the middle in terms of worldwide experiences. You know, for a developed country, I don't think we have the best airports in the world by a long stretch. But, you know, you look at some of the older US airports and you think, well, okay, we're doing a lot better than that. And that's absolutely true in my experience. But then, you know, I've just got back from Japan. Japanese airports, I find, are much more user-friendly. You know, there are many more facilities that actually appeal to people and that are useful, rather than, you know, the really big-name, high-end luxury goods stores, which barely anybody ever goes into. You know, there are things that you can actually do and get excited about before you get on the plane, and so that puts you in a much better frame of mind, I think.
I love this text. It's from Jackie, and it says, "This is so funny. Our family has a running joke that Dad goes into, in inverted commas, airport mode when he's in one of those
so
spaces."
Many dads do, I think.
I think we all do. I go into airport mode when we're still at home, right? I ask my daughter a million times to go to the toilet. She's like, "Mum, I've been to the toilet. Leave me alone."
I should say one thing I try to do whenever I'm in an airport, particularly when I'm flying long haul, I make a real point of going and having a glass of champagne somewhere in the airport, even though it's really expensive, way overpriced, to try and part of it is to sort of settle down and just relax. But another part of it is to kind of, you know, celebrate the experience of flying, of travel, and try to remember this is a thing that's amazing and it's really good and I'm really lucky and I should celebrate that fact. And so I find just a little glass of champagne kind of helps to achieve that.
Make you feel a little bit fancy, although later in the program we'll talk about what alcohol does to your system, especially when you're on a plane, and why our bodies do really strange things. Nathan in Wodonga says, "I know I get stressed at the airport, but I feel like sometimes I'm treated like a criminal at security screening, and I'm very even-tempered even though I get through." And others that say, "Good morning. I've always thought that there are three worlds within our earth. They are the airports, hospitals, and government buildings. People automatically change as soon as they walk through one of these doors." That's from Ben in Sale.
There are so many frustrations, though, that go into the airport experience, particularly as everyone seems to have completely different rules. Even within Australia, there are different rules. You know, do you have to take your laptop out of your bag? Some places you do, some places you don't. I was just going through security in Japan, and I was wearing boots, which just, you know, covered my ankle. And so they said, "Right, those cover your ankle. You've got to take your shoes off and put them through the machine." And it was like, no one else makes me do this. Why do you make me do this? And it's you really have to stop yourself from getting upset about it, because you have no power. And it all seems so arbitrary and ridiculous.
Although I remember, and it wasn't too long ago, there was a young boy, a young child who was flying, who was incredibly, incredibly scared of flying. And the pilot made an effort to come out and to speak to him in the waiting lounge and really spend some time with him, and then took him on first. And the amount of effort that went into it, it was just so beautiful to see. Unfortunately, this little boy still got too scared and ended up not being able to make it on the plane. But just being able to watch the experience of someone else trying to make that, you know, a really pleasant moment for them. Ben Groundwater is with you, travel writer for the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. We're looking at our behaviour and how our behaviour changed at airports and on aeroplanes. How can we make it a more pleasant experience?
On the
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Ben Groundwater with you. Do you notice your behaviour change when you walk into an airport or when you get onto a plane? Andrew Lund is the spokesperson for Melbourne Airport. And Andrew, you're going to have an incredibly busy couple of days. How do you and your team manage the heightened stress that many of us are going through when we walk into an airport?
Yeah, morning, Rochelle. It's a really good question. We know that travel can be a stressful time for a lot of people. It's for a lot of people, they don't fly very regularly, and there are a lot of procedures that people are subject to that they wouldn't usually be faced with. Things like security, you know, having to navigate their way around the terminals to find their gate. We actually map those stress points. We know that check-in, security, finding a gate, can be a difficult experience for people, so we try to make them as easy for people as we can. But at the same time, we acknowledge some of the points you've raised, that inconsistency in security, even within our own airport. There are different screening processes within different terminals, so we've got to work to iron those out and try to give people as much of a predictable experience as possible.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you want that balance, right? Because we want to feel protected and we want to feel safe and we want to make sure that there's a lot of security there. But at the same time, we kind of want it to be an easy breezy experience for us, and we don't want all of those checks and balances. So you must have to find the right type of person to do this work, Andrew.
We do, and we're actually putting a lot of effort into customer service training around Melbourne Airport. We've got a program that's called Stepping Forward, where we're putting all of our frontline staff, so not just security personnel, but the corporate staff, the engineers, the plumbers, the baggage trolley collectors, basically anybody you see at Melbourne Airport wearing a lanyard, we're putting them through customer service training to not just respond to customers, but identify people who look lost, who look like they need a bit of help, and actively intervene to try to make their journey a little bit less stressful. And it's funny, walking around the airport, you can pick the people who look a little bit lost and who just need a little prompt in the right direction, and you give that to them and you can see the weight lift off their shoulders.
Is that something you've experienced, Ben, if you know what to, when you're going in and you know what to expect, or if you're a seasoned traveller, but then you might have someone next to you, are you trying to calm them down in some way?
I guess so. It's a hard thing to know, you know, what your interaction with other people should be and how much that's going to be appreciated. I think, you know, there was someone trying to go through a security line in Sydney recently, a young Japanese student, and his passport wasn't working, and the guy who was the customs official who was standing near him was telling him what to do, but the guy was already doing this, and so I took the guy aside and said, look, you know, you're doing the right thing, it's okay, and then I explained to the customs official that this is... it's actually a problem with the machine, and so he helped out and got him through, and that was okay. So I think that was certainly appreciated. But Andrew, I'd be interested in hearing what advice you would give to people, particularly coming up to Easter, like how they can make their own experience a better one.
Yeah, look, I think the key one, Ben, is just giving yourself enough time, like acknowledging it's a busy time to travel, so there are a lot of people who need to get through those security checkpoints, check in. The planes will be busy. If you give yourself time, that takes a bit of pressure off you. It means you're not stressed. You know, if you've had to drive around the car park for a little bit longer finding a car park, you know, if you haven't left enough time, you're stressed when you get to check in, you know, you're worried you're going to miss your flight. So just allowing that little bit of extra time takes that pressure off you. It also takes pressure off the system. And it just gives everybody a bit of a more pleasant experience. But going in prepared as well, I mean, you know, if you're not familiar with the airport, we have maps on the website, so you can get familiar with the terminal. People can check that out ahead of time. We've actually, the other thing we've started doing is trying to look at some pre-departure journey videos for people. So we've done one for our international departures where people can basically follow the departures journey so they can see what they're in for and prepare themselves for that and know what's coming. And I think sometimes it's the fear of the unknown. Like you've sort of mentioned with security, people don't know from one airport to the other what's expected of them, whether their aerosols need to come out of their bag.
Mm.
So us trying to give people that information ahead of time so they're prepared and they feel comfortable, I think that helps.
and focus on the destination. I often help. I'm always thinking, just imagine where you're going to end up, Rish. You know, and as you said too, Ben, it's a privilege to be able to travel and to be able to afford to travel. Andrew, you and your team's going to have a really busy couple of days. So thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure.
That's Andrew Lund, their spokesperson for Melbourne Airport. Rochelle Hunt and Ben Groundwater with you. Marcus has called from Charlton. Morning, Marcus.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Really well. What did you want to say?
We've been lucky enough to travel in and around a bit, and there are several airports which have really impressed us. One was Singapore Airport, where just before COVID, we were there before Christmas, and the airport was decked out with fantastic Christmas decorations and an enormous Christmas tree, which every half hour dropped numbered balls down from it. And passengers and people in the terminal could go up and collect a ball and take it to the desk and win a prize. And it might be a USB stick or it could be a computer. It was an amazing thing, or it might be a coffee from the coffee lounge. But it was just such great atmosphere and great fun.
It changed the vibe, you reckon?
It did. In Singapore, of course, they've also got this beautiful butterfly house. You can go in and experience the butterfly house in the airport. But just on another international airport, Hong Kong, we found leaving from Kowloon, you could actually check your luggage in at the train station. And they'd send their luggage out, so you didn't have to carry your luggage out through the train and things. It was just, you know, some great ideas.
I wonder how that is a great idea. How successful is that luggage idea, Ben? Do you know much about popping your luggage on at the train station and then it gets checked at the airport?
I'm not sure about Hong Kong. I haven't travelled there for a little while, but they do that in Switzerland as well. The Swiss train system is tied in with the Swiss airport system. And basically, wherever you're staying in the country, if you're taking the train to the airport, which, you know, you will be because it's so convenient and so cheap, you can check your luggage in at that train station and then that will be taken care of for you. It'll be taken to the airport. It'll be taken onto the plane. You just go and do your own thing with your carry-on luggage. And it's just amazing. It's one of those things that, I don't know, I guess it feels like a small thing to just not have to have your luggage with you the whole time, but it immediately puts you in this frame of mind of luxury in some ways, and I think that's what we're all chasing. You know, when we were talking about the balls coming down from the Christmas tree with all these little bonus extras, I was thinking, wow, is one of them an upgrade to business class? Because that's what you really want.
See, I'm secretly always hoping for that, right? It's never, ever happened. Once we accidentally got given a premium economy tickets, and once we got to the final checkout, they looked at us and went, yeah, no, I'm sorry, there's been a mistake. And I was like, oh, I was so close. I was just so close. The idea of little incentives or how you behave on a plane. I remember the first time I was lucky enough to travel overseas and everybody applauded when the plane landed, which I experience.
That's a peculiar cultural thing, which I find happens more often in certain countries than others. I don't really understand it. I guess people are just so relieved. And, you know, we tend to clap for lots of performances. I suppose the pilot successfully landing this plane from way up in the air is a thing to acknowledge.
I love the idea of applauding at the end. The Butterfly House. Have you been to the Butterfly House at Singapore Airport?
I have. It's amazing. I mean, Singapore Changi is one of those airports that, you know, I could spend the whole hour waxing lyrical about this airport. There are so many facilities in there that are designed for the comfort and enjoyment of a vast range of people, which I think is really what we want from airports. So, you know, there is a butterfly lounge. There's also a rooftop pool that you can go and have a swim at. There are sleep pods that you can, some that, you know, you can hire. You can stay in a hotel for a few hours if you want to within the terminal, or you can go and jump into a sleep pod for free and get a little nap in. You know, there are plenty of shops. There's a hawker center. You know, Singapore is really famous for its hawker centers, and there is a miniature hawker center within the airport where you can go and eat authentic local food, which I think is another huge part. If you can have a proper tourism experience, a proper experience of the place that you're in, you know, I'm not thinking about being hassled in lines or, you know, the 14 hours I'm then going to spend on a plane after that. Not at all. What I'm thinking about is how cool it is to get a proper char kway chow from a hawker in the middle of an airport.
I love the idea of sleeping pods as well, because I think sleep and lack of sleep really adds to the stress and maybe to some of the poor behaviour that many of us may exhibit while we're travelling, especially if it's long haul. How widespread are sleep pods?
They're becoming more widespread, I think. You see them around a little bit more. There are some airports which seem to go to great lengths to ensure that you can't lie down and go to sleep anywhere. And I'm not really sure what the thinking is there. They just
hostile furniture. It's almost like similar to thing to people some councils do with some outdoor furniture to try and discourage homeless people from sleeping in some areas.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and I don't really know what the thinking is behind that. But yeah, there are certainly international terminals now around the world which are providing small places for people. You know, they may not be super comfortable. They're not going to be the same as a bed ever. But you know, there are places that you can curl up and can grab a little nap. The danger is then obviously getting too comfortable and sleeping through your flight taking off. So you're going to have to balance those two things.
Or swimming. If there was a pool, it'd be all over. I'd be up there.
Yeah, there's a rooftop pool in Changi in one of the terminals. And yeah, you do have to keep an eye on the time. Absolutely.
And then you'd be, you know, running to the plane in your togs and a towel. I'm sure you wouldn't be the first and you certainly wouldn't be the last. So why does our behaviour change when we enter to an airport or to a plane? Have you witnessed some poor behaviour? Or alternatively, have you witnessed some really great behaviour? And what makes that experience good for you? Is it finding somewhere to eat? Is it finding somewhere to sleep? Is it having a shower? Maybe you've been to the butterfly house or to the rooftop pool.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Ben Groundwater with you. Ben's a travel writer of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age as we look at our behaviour at airports and on planes and why and if it changes. There's a great message here from Alan who's in Diggers Rest and it says, when I go to the airport, I certainly do change into a more pleasant and relaxed person who just loves air travel. Although it can sometimes be busy and frustrating during busy times, it can also be calm. You just need to breathe and relax and anticipate the good times that are coming at the end of the flight. However, part of the air travel is air travel itself. I just love the aircraft and flying, the takeoffs, the landing. These are my favourite times, particularly landing in an unfamiliar spot. So airports can be enjoyable. Hong Kong, yes, you do the check in at the airport, the city, you never see your luggage until you land. And I have used that facility with no added cost many times over. So looking at all of the things that we love about flying. Michelle Huntington is a former Virgin Australia airline captain. She's also the host of the podcast Captain and the Clown. Michelle, everyone's a little bit emotional when they fly, aren't they? Whether it be excitement, fear, joy, frustration, you name it. Does that impact what you do as a captain?
Hi, Rochelle. Hi, Ben. Our job is to get passengers from A to B in the safest, quickest, most economical way that we possibly can. And definitely we notice emotions as people come onto the aircraft. So we, our ears and eyes in the cabin are the cabin crew, and they assess every passenger as they board. So they're looking, they're listening, they're smelling what passengers. So
they're smelling.
Well, alcohol, something else. If they're fidgeting, if they're obviously aggressive or nervous, laughing. They're assessing everyone as they're coming on, and they tell us if they have a concern. So we then make the call whether that passenger flies or not.
Wow. I remember my auntie, she has such a huge fear of flying to the point, I think as the plane was starting to take off, she, you know, got out of her seat and was down sort of face first on the floor, you know, wailing. And the air stewards were incredible. I think they got her a glass of champagne. They sat down, they sat with her, they spoke through everything. It's quite a skill, Michelle, isn't it?
Absolutely. And they are trained to do that, to assess it. You know, psychology 101 is what they do best. And I really, really admire how they do it also. They can empathise with passengers. And even when a passenger appears to be aggressive or overly emotional, either positive or negatively, they're still able to control that situation and seemingly without bias as well.
Michelle, I find your role in this really interesting because as far as I'm concerned as a passenger, I always picture the captain as being solely focused on, you know, getting the plane off the ground and landing it again. But obviously you're the captain, you're running the show, you're the leader. So you have a lot of decisions to make in terms of what the passengers are doing as well as concentrating on flying the plane.
Absolutely. So if you consider the captain as the manager and then everyone else doing. So the cabin supervisor, we term cabin captain, and everyone is a team and reports to the end goal of getting from A to B safely. And because we are concentrating on the logistics of flying the aircraft as well, but ultimately we are the last stop. So it's our decision is the final.
Do you have many people? I've never done this, all right? I'm just saying it. But yeah. Do you have many people trying to sneak into, you know, business class, first class? And then how do you manage that? Do you ever let anyone in? We think, you know what, I'm actually going to let you come through. It might be a mum with a bub, whatever it may be. But I think people get very, it's quite confrontational, right? When that little curtain closes and you go, what's happening on the other side?
You mean that magnetic rope that nobody can possibly pass?
Exactly.
You do see it, and you've got to applaud some of the attempts, some of the things that people do. They accidentally fall into business class or you know, they just
tripped and fell into 1A.
That's it.
It's a good idea.
And look, generally, because it is the cabin manager will, you know, decide how they do that. And nobody wants aggression, and nobody wants to tell people no. However, if people are really, you know, trying it on a little bit too much, especially when business class is full and the labs, for example, lavatories are pumping, you know, they're full, they're not going to allow someone else up. So there has been times when for weight and balance we've had to move passengers around, and you know, people who look like they might deserve a break up in business get a go up the front, but otherwise it's generally pretty strict wherever you purchased your ticket. That's
I'm waiting for that day. I don't know. You have to give me some hints on how to give those puppy dog eyes in order.
I think chocolates. I think they love chocolates. So
straight
if
up
you,
bribery.
You bring gifts, yeah, absolutely.
Why did I never think? Have you ever been given a sneaky upgrade, Ben?
To be honest, it happened to me once, and yeah. it's never happened again. And I was flying on a Qantas flight, and the crew manager, the cabin manager, came up to back to and said to me, "Hey, I just saw your name on the manifest, and I really like your stories. And there's a spare seat up the front if you want to come up." And
it was just a puff of smoke of where you were once sitting as you.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought, wow, this happens all the time, and how good is this going to be? Never happened ever again. So, thank you, Craig, if you're out there. I did appreciate
Craig,
that.
Craig, we love you, Craig.
But Michelle, I'm really interested as well in do you guys have strategies to manage, you know, you and the crew, do you have strategies to manage the cabin as a whole? You know, say the flight has been delayed, or, you know, there's people coming off a cancelled flight. Obviously, everyone's going to be stressed and probably pretty upset. Like, how do you deal with all of those people and get them to enjoy the experience, or at least, you know, stay calm during the experience?
Absolutely. And what we find is that most people, there's aggression if they don't understand something, if they don't have enough information. So rather than they're all guessing and then murmurs start and, you know, aggression and, you know, they start to fill in gaps that aren't necessarily there and with the incorrect information, it's better to give a PA. So either the cabin crew, so the cabin manager will do it if the captain is busy with whatever's gone wrong with the aircraft. Otherwise, it's always best to have the captain do it and just say, hey, you know, this has happened, we understand, and you know, give empathy. We understand it's frustrating. We're doing our best. We'll get going soon, and we, you know, try and give a time to manage people's expectations. Then they can make arrangements at the other end, for example, you know, someone coming to pick them up, delay them, change accommodation, etc. So, we don't want to have people unhappy with the airline as a business and with as a service, because we want them to come back again.
And just finally, Michelle, how do you manage alcohol and alcohol consumption? People might often have a glass at the airport because they're a little bit nervous. I think it settles their nerves. Then once you're on the aeroplane, your body's already doing weird things. And we'll actually, you know, speak about that a little later, what physically happens to our body when we're flying. The role of alcohol and ensuring that people don't get drunk and that they behave properly, does that put a lot of pressure on your team?
It does. So they all are trained with a responsible service of alcohol, and they will cut you off. They're also looking out that for people who are trying to sneak some of their own alcohol on board. So it's actually against the law in Australia to do that, to drink your own. And Civil Aviation Safety Authority also have and state their law that any passenger that's unruly due to alcohol can be removed, and even diverted flights because of unruly passengers due to alcohol.
Have you ever had to do that?
We have, yes. They also had, it was a mixture of alcohol and medication, and it just went really badly for that passenger up in the air. And so we have had to divert and had authorities waiting on the ground. But one particular one, before I was in the airlines, I was doing a little charter flight, 10-seater plane, took the management then up to a race day up at Scone. They had a great time, but a full day in the sun, betting, successful betting and lots of drinks. Coming back, we were flying. Everything was going well until they needed to go to the toilet. This little plane didn't have a toilet.
Oh, no.
So they got inventive, which I was, you know, quite pleased. They started to fill the beer bottles, empty beer bottles. But then they decided to do stacks on, so they were one side to the other of the aircraft.
Oh, my goodness.
A little plane, and it was getting hard to manage, like physically hard. So turned around and said, hey, guys, you know, cut it out. And then they started to throw the beer bottles. it wasn't nice. I radioed ahead and landed just up near where you are, Ben, at Warnervale there, and the police came and met us and took them off. But it was a horrific experience. Well, they were lovely gentlemen on the way up. It's just that combination of alcohol, sun, and feeling like they're invincible, I think.
Oh, Michelle, that's terrible. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today. I hope that never happens to you ever again.
No, never will.
Michelle Huntington, former Virgin Australian airline captain. She's also the host of a podcast, which is called Captain and the Clown. Rochelle Hunt and Ben Groundwater with you. Peter's in Malvern. Morning, Peter.
Yes, good morning.
What did you want to share?
Back to Singapore Airport, the... men's urinals have one of the most brilliant design ideas I've ever seen.
Yeah, right.
In the standing urinals, they've got a transfer of a fly in the spot where if you direct the stream there, you'll cause the least splash. Now, of course, boys being boys, they're always going to aim for just that spot. And they must have saved themselves a fortune in cleaning costs.
Someone's had a brilliant
design idea. Oh, it was stunning. Yeah.
Do you travel a lot, Peter?
As much as I possibly can, yes.
What makes the experience not as stressful for you?
Basically, when things work. The airlines and airports I regard as the best of where things work. They're pretty much on time. You can find stuff. Most airports are pretty good, some of the pits. But Changi's one of the better ones, and there are several others which are really good that you're happy to go back to over and over again.
Good on you, Peter. Great to hear from you. Rebecca's in South Yarra. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Thanks for the show. I just wanted to mention that I stopped over in Dubai on the way to the other hemisphere pre-COVID, and it was beautiful because they made no announcements. It's what's called, I think, a silent airport.
Oh.
So passengers just have to pay attention to their own timing of when they have to board. But they don't make announcements constantly. And it was really, really relaxing.
I think you've touched on something there, Rebecca, that we haven't spoken about, Ben, and that is plane travel pre-COVID. And things have changed, haven't they, post-COVID? And I wonder whether our stress levels have increased during that period.
Yeah, things have changed. But in some ways, I feel like they're going back to the way they were before. There was certainly a period there, obviously, where basically none of us could travel at all. And so that was a huge change. But then going back into travel as the world started to gradually open up, there was a huge amount of stress around the travel experience then, because all of a sudden this idea of being in close proximity to a whole lot of strangers was far more frightening and stressful than it used to be. And it used to be fairly stressful before that, but now you've got the threat of this virus going around. And so that caused a lot more stress among people. There was also the issue of airports weren't working in the way that they had before. it was taking a long time to get things back together. So, you know, luggage was being lost at a phenomenal rate. Mm. Flights were being cancelled all over the place. There was a huge amount of stress. But I think the good news is that, from my experience at least, travel seems to be finding that level of normality again. Things are working the way they're supposed to again. People's worry about circumstances has lessened to what I think it was before the pandemic now, which is not.
It's interesting when you look at key global or news events that happen and how that changes air travel for that particular period. I'm thinking terror attacks. I'm thinking even Chappelle Corby. Remember, we all went through a phase where everyone was wrapping their luggage up in
glad wrap.
No one
was going with bodyboards, that's for sure. Yeah.
But there were key moments where it changed air travel forever, and COVID, I guess, is just one that is added to that list.
It has, yeah. I mean, yeah, there are some like the Chappelle Corby, which sort of come and go. For a few months, people are really worried about a certain thing and then they forget about it. There are others like, you know, the September 11 attacks in New York City and in the US, which have completely changed the travel experience forever. You know, so many of the security measures that we now see in place across the world are because of that day. So, yeah, there are all sorts of things that do make a difference. So sometimes they last for a long time. Sometimes they're done in a few days.
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Ben Groundwater with you as we look at airport and airline travel and how it does or doesn't change our behaviour. When you're talking about your very lucky one upgrade, Ben, may there be many more. A friend of mine used to travel for business a lot, and he got upgraded once into first class. And I remember him telling me about how they gave him pajamas, and that's all I could focus on. I was like, "You got pajamas? Like, what? What did you do with your clothes? Where did you put your clothes?" The logistics that sort of came with the pajamas that he was given. Plenty of texts on this. It says, "Morning, guys. If I expand on your flying behaviour further, we're told that the customer is always right. People just assume because they've paid for something that they can act in a certain way and that they have a certain sense of entitlement." And this is from Dax, and it says, "Airports," and there's a couple of exclamation points. It says, "I get profiled every time. I have to factor that in. I think it's my dreadlocks." And Eric's in Warrigal, and it says, "In Beijing, the airport lounges have seats with screens between them for napping. I've had a 7-hour layover over and then I've needed a nap on my 20-minute trip even to Sweden." And others saying it's not just airports. Some people believe it's okay just to act badly wherever they are now just because they're paying for something. That's from Maggie in Werribee. But after our caller talking about the design of the toilet, I wonder how much the design of airports has got to do with our experience. Matt Finlay is a senior associate at Cox Architectural Firm. Matt, you've worked a lot. You specialise in aviation and in transport design. What goes into designing a great airport experience?
Well, where do I start? Airports over the years have changed from the days that there were a couple of leather sofas and people would mill out onto the airfield with no security at all. Fast forward to today and pre-post-COVID, that's a different story again. But now we've got millions, and we measure terminal throughput in million passengers per annum. So the thing that we're always trying to do is find more space. We're trying to create more seamless interactions with security, get the stress out. And I think that's a huge issue with the anticipation of flight. That whole thing of missing the plane, try to slow passengers down where possible and give them amenity to do so. So whether that's great toilet design, so nothing should be searched for. And in every survey that we come across, toilets are in the top three, if not the top, you know, two issues that people complain about. So things like retail, with things like services that kind of sometimes seem to get in the way. And I know airlines sometimes get a little bit jittery at the fact that there's, 15 kilometres of duty-free and scotch bottles to get through before they get to a flight. It's very much the intention to be able to kind of, for us as architects, to give amenity through that experience. So, for instance, create a concierge at the beginning of duty free if you're flying international. So you can actually go to the bathroom, sort the kids out, put people where they need to be, and then you may want to look up and shop. Mm. So you are a conductor in an orchestra of border force, security, quarantine, and that's very much in the international context. But then also the other stakeholders, such as the retailers, the food and beverage operators, and of course, what airport would be complete without the airlines and their lounges and needs and boarding requirements.
Matt, what are some of the design factors that can help exacerbate, some of the sort of bottlenecks of airports, mm. where people are queuing up, at check-in, at security, at the boarding gates? How do you, as an architect, attack that?
We've had to really, really latch on in the last decade and keep abreast of technology. And I think there's not a client out there or an airport that doesn't aspire to kind of run their airports and facilities with cutting-edge technology. So if you start at check-in, about 10, 15 years ago, you saw the first introduction of auto bag drops and kiosks. Everybody was scratching their heads, kind of needing assistance. You probably needed even more staff at that stage to get people through because no one knew how to do it, including myself. Fast forward now, we're seeing the last of the conventional check-ins all start to change to ABDs, and everybody, and regardless of age, is getting the hang of it. Move forward through to security. Many going out of Melbourne now will notice as they go to take their laptop out of the bag, you don't need to do that anymore. Liquids, aerosols and gels, ditto. So CT technology, CT scanners are enabling security to be a lot easier and seamless. Yeah. Seamless. However, it's slower and they are bigger. So architecturally, you have to make a bigger terminal. The queues need to be bigger because at times these machines are a little bit more sluggish. So you kind of, there is a frustration of sometimes replacing one, fixing one problem, but finding, you may have another one pop up.
Is there a way of bringing a little bit of luxury into the everyday person's experience? So if there's always going to be, the first class experience and the lounges and whatnot, but is there a way to make, for the majority of us, we're flying economy and we're checking in economy and we're going, we're not turning right, we're turning left or whichever way it may be. But is there a way to kind of even out the playing field a little bit more, whether that be access to sleeping pods like they're doing in some countries? Are you starting to see a more global shift towards making that experience better for everyone?
I think so. I think Australian airports have been a little slower. And in fairness, airports such as Changi, Dubai, Schiphol have always been the front runners in, new technologies and new ways of accommodating people. I mean, even simple things like giving access to charging points so you don't have to kneel behind the vending machine on your hands and knees to
unplug the chip machine.
that's exactly right.
Maybe. I mean, not that I've ever done it, right?
I was lucky enough to spend quite a lot of years working with Changi Airport on a few of their terminals, and we used to have a slogan there which was better than the lounge. And what we actually found was there was people, many business passengers that would drop off their bags in the lounge, have a shower and do whatever, and then go downstairs, upstairs, up to the butterfly garden, all types of things to experience what was on offer. And I think really what's happening now is that there's a recognition that rather than stacking people in bench or what we call beam seats, those very unflexible back-to-back type of seating arrangements, and looking at a more broken apart lounge setting where people can either sit with a loved one or even, goodness gracious, lie back and have a bit of a snooze rather than
Just make it more, just comfortable. It's fascinating the amount of work and thought that goes into it. Matt, thank you. I'm going to be paying attention to all of those things next time I have the privilege of walking through an airport. Matthew Finlay there is a senior associate with Cox Architectural Firm. Ben Groundwater, this is great. There's a text here. It says San Francisco Airport had a museum-type display in each terminal. Last time I was there, it was the history of board games. It was great to read and see. It took up some time whilst I was waiting. I haven't been there since about 2018, but I presume it's still there with a different display every few months or so. The innovation that can be used, I mean, not everywhere is going to have a butterfly house, but it would be a great place to display art.
It would, yeah. There's the Seoul Incheon actually has a museum within it as well, and it's such a great idea. You know, these are things that are designed purely for the pleasure and the enjoyment of passengers, and I feel like that, you know, that should be a thing that all airports are trying to achieve, but it's obviously not, because there are so many that don't do those things. And sometimes it takes thinking outside the box a little bit. You know, Seoul Incheon as well also has a golf driving range next to the terminals. Yeah, so not within the terminals, but if you can get out of the terminals. Exactly, yeah, you can go and whack a few golf balls. Like how, for certain people, that's going to make you feel so much more relaxed about the whole experience and enjoy it all so much more.
So a lot of what we've been talking about is the emotions that we feel, the stress, the anxiety. Then once you get on the plane, there's also the physicality as well. You know, your feet or your hands might swell up. You mightn't feel great. There's always that person that's doing their stretching and their moves on the plane. So you take all of that into consideration. That will impact and affect how we feel. Dr. Kate Manderson is a principal medical officer of the Civil Aviation Safety Authority. She's also the past president of the Australasian Society of Aerospace Medicine. What an incredible world you work in, Kate. Let's talk about the plane itself. Look, without oversharing, I swell up, right? My ankles, my hands, I bloat. I turn into the Michelin man. I don't know if it's not enough water and too much cheap Chardonnay, but what happens to our body when we fly?
Thanks very much. So a lot of things can happen to our bodies when we fly. The human was designed to be on the ground at sea level or relatively close to sea level. And of course, the cabin environment and the cabin altitude is not sea level. There's a lot of things that add up to get to the point that you've got that swelling going on, and it's very individual for different people. It's a connection between can be your hydration status. It's a lot about how much you move or don't move. If you're trapped in that window seat three seats in and you can't get over the person next to you, you can't move your feet around to get that muscle pump going to get the fluid moving. So there's a lot of different things that come together to make that swelling happen. Not necessarily the pressure changes as such, but certainly it's not an environment that we are designed to be in for a long time.
Kate, without wanting to be too descriptive, let's digestive system. Does flying on a plane do something to you?
Say it.
Absolutely, it does, no question. So it's all about, I'll get a bit of physics going on, a bit of science here. It is about the science of gases and what gases do when we go up in the sky. So as we go up, the pressure decreases it's the way the planet works. And with decreased pressure, gas expands. And at the altitude that most of our aircraft are pressurized to, so 6,000 to 8,000 feet, you can expect the gases inside your body to expand by about 30% or thereabouts. So that's why when you go up, you feel your ears popping, because that's the gas in your middle ear cavity expanding and coming out through the correct holes in the back of your throat. But it also means the gas inside your gut will expand. It comes out the top end, it comes out the bottom end. Sometimes it doesn't come out at all and can cause a lot of discomfort for people in their abdomen and chest pain, tummy pain and you know, gurgly, bloaty kind of thing. Because the gases expand with that reduced pressure.
So what do you need to take into consideration then? I'm not sure if this is your area of expertise, Kate. This is fascinating. But what you serve on the plane, because there are some foods maybe that would work with and work against. If you know, if you're getting a bloated belly and there's a lot of flatulence happening, you'd have to think about the food that you serve on the plane as well.
Look, absolutely. The dietary requirements and expectations for people who are travelling on the aeroplane is that it's a whole factor, and the airlines have whole departments that are dedicated to making sure that the food is safe and it's fit for purpose and it looks after everyone. I couldn't tell you whether they particularly choose or exclude certain foods based on their gut production.
Chickpeas.
I think it is very, very individual. I would say everyone's gut will deal with different foods differently. And that's why sauerkraut might be fine for you and the person next to you is
don't go
not
serving
have
sauerkraut.
A great night.
What about the idea of emotions? Lots of people have spoken about how they feel teary, that they cry more on a plane, whether it be a book that they're reading, a film that they're watching, whatever it may be. Do aeroplanes make you cry more?
Look, I think I was listening to the previous speaker as well. I think he touched on a bit about the emotions that are associated with travel and with air travel in particular. I'm not sure that the physical location of being in an airplane itself makes people more likely to be emotional, but I think the context would add to it. So, for example, you may well have been frantically getting to the aeroplane, you've had to juggle the kids and you're at your wit's end, and the final straw is that sad movie that you're watching. The people around you don't know you, so having a little bit of a cry, nobody's going to think less of you as a person because they don't even know who you are. There's also fatigue is a really important factor there as well. So you're out of time zones, you may be traveling for a long time, your fuse is a bit shorter in terms of regulating your emotions in that setting. And then maybe even the reason you're flying, you might have said goodbye to your family for a long time, you might be traveling to see a very sick family member. It's a highly emotional time for a lot of people to be traveling, and I think that all adds up.
Absolutely. Dr. Kate Manderson, thank you so much for your insights. I could pick your brain all day. Thank you. Principal Medical Officer at the Civil Aviation Safety Authority, the past president of the Australasian Society of Aerospace Medicine. Ben Groundwater, this is hilarious. It's not surprising though. We're talking about things to pass the time at certain airports. It just says Las Vegas has pokies.
Of course.
That does not surprise me. And one thing that we didn't touch on, so I hate to throw a grenade in right at the end, but the etiquette around whether to recline or not recline.
Honestly, we could have done an entire hour on this and we would still have more to talk about. It causes, I think, so many flashpoints, so many incidents of air rage that happen are because of seat reclining. People already feel that they have a very small amount of space when they're on a plane, and when suddenly the back of the seat in front of you comes flying towards your face, people get upset about it, and there's no sort of hard and fast rules here. There are sort
if
of unwritten rules.
If they can recline, people feel like they're entitled to recline. So you either make the chairs not recline.
As some airlines are doing now. There are some budget airlines, particularly in Europe, that are making seats that don't recline. And I think that's a totally reasonable thing to do, and people can choose whether they would prefer to be on an airline where they can do that, or if they can put up with sitting up straight for 2 hours or so, which in Europe is often just as far as you're flying, and I think that's probably a fairly reasonable thing to expect.
Strangely, after all of this, I have the biggest urge to get on an aeroplane and to fly and to experience all of these things from the farting to the reclining, really. It's going
to
be great.
To just try and do it all better.
Ben Groundwater, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much. Have a safe and happy Easter.
Thank you, Rochelle. You too.
Ben Groundwater, travel writer of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.